And we are here for, of course, Mortgage House on this breakfast program. 13 13 32 is our number. Sue Cato joins us here to talk spin every Wednesday morning, and she's here with me. Hello, Sue. How are you?
Good morning, John.
Now, you've
morning,
walked Gary. Into the lion's den, you know, because Gary's been itching to put the acid on the first woman that walks through the door as to whether they are better drivers than men.
We've had this ongoing debate all morning. We've had Duncan Gay, the roads minister, on here, and he's shown us stats that 60% of women on the roads compared to 40% of men are having their licences renewed at half the cost because they've actually won that incentive. They're the safest drivers on the road. Are they the safest? And does that necessarily make them better drivers?
I am loath to just do a straight split on gender. I think it's actually got to do with interest in driving. But I suppose it comes down to that lots of blokes can be hotheads, and I'd be interested to see what those stats are in terms of age. And I know I'm being a little bit more serious than you might like on this, Gary, but the question is, does it skew to, you know, young idiots? You know, because as we all know, men don't mature until they're about 55. Sorry, how old are you, Gary? About 65. No, so I'm sure it's got an age slant.
You two teaming up again, are you? Now let's look at your household though. You got a bloke. Is he a better driver than you? I mean, who takes when you're heading off to somewhere together? Who drives?
Gary, I can be quite competitive, but I'm not competitive with my husband about who's a better driver. But I love driving. He likes driving too, but I love driving. Yeah, and so I try to drive as much as I can.
Yeah, I actually think that a more interesting test, and we heard this from Duncan Gay earlier, who's the better parker? Who does a better job when you're in trouble and you're sort of, there's the park, you're running a bit late, that space, can we fit in that? Now, one partner can generally just go bang, bang, swing the wheel straight in, and then there's someone else, probably like Gary, that sort of goes, oh.
No, excuse me, in my household, and she who must be obeyed will agree with me on this, I am the parker. I'm the one who knows how to reverse park probably. She needs a space of the size of the Grand Canyon to actually get it even close.
Okay, now this is going to sound weird, but I actually love reverse parks. And I love doing
weird.
Them. I know it's weird, and it's just the getting the angles right and doing it perfectly. So it's kind of like doing it just in one swing.
Because you're all about the angles, aren't you? You're the spin doctor.
No, but I had someone in my car the other day who said, you've got this parking assist thing, why aren't you using it? And I said, because that takes all the fun out of it. I actually like reverse parking.
It's lovely hearing that scrunch noise, that scratching noise at the end of it, isn't it?
Gary, we'll have a look at the front and back of
your car. Hop in your car, head down to Canberra, because, I mean, you're going to have to address this. We have to talk about it very quickly this morning. But what we've seen, the events of the last 72 hours down there, the challenge that's been on, or not on in the end, should the Prime Minister toss his Chief of Staff, Peter Credlin, and his Treasurer, Joe Hockey, overboard to save his own skin?
Well, look, it's so complex. The reason I would say there has to be a change is that he has to, and this is advisory, et cetera, and, you know, whether he retires Joe or not's another question, but the way he operates has to change. So I really think he needs a new pair of eyes in the office, even if they've got, you know, they don't have a John Faulkner in the Liberal Party these days, you know, the sort of the Grand General. They need somebody to actually be a sounding board who's now running the show, who just changes the nature of engagement, because if he keeps going the way we're going, on performance, there will be another stuff up and he will go.
Now, I'm going to put on my antenna here and try and guess what you're about to say, but I would have thought that your recommendations to Tony Abbott right now would be, mate, why are you appearing on television every 30 seconds at some silly press conference or at some hard hat opening of a construction site when you've just told Australia that you're getting back to work, that good government starts here? He shouldn't be seen for the next couple of months, should he?
Well, you know, it's interesting. The battle is to make it look like everything's back to normal. And that, you know, the events of recent days were sort of just make-believe in some way. So that's why he's doing it. But, you know, if you look at all the columnists today right across the media, well, not all the columnists, but so many of them, people have clearly got a hangover and all of this stuff, and people want it to go away, and they want politicians to stop behaving badly. We're seriously, seriously fatigued by the nonsense coming out of Canberra.
Yep. So let's move on, because none of us want to talk about it or hear about it again. This is a much more interesting topic. Charities. Now, you've advised a lot of very senior, very influential and wealthy people over the years. I don't know if you've advised any athletes, have you?
Is this Grumpy Gary coming
out? Have you advised any athletes?
Yeah. Generally working for the organisations rather than the individual athletes.
So do you normally advise someone who's quite prominent that it's about time you set up a charity? Because the number of well-known people who seem to preside over charities and then take a fair bit of money out of those charities seems to be growing.
Well, it's impossible not to have heard your views on charities, Mr. Grumpy Bum. But I made a mistake, in fact, when I married my husband, that because we thought we had enough gifts, which is a nice place to be, and that we said to all of our friends, donate to the RSPCA or Red Cross, because I'm an animal lover and, he's a nice person.
He's a human lover.
So we had about 30 or 40 of our friends make donations. And now, of course, we get 30 or 40 letters. So we've got, because it was made in our name, we just get totally hammered by
all
the
time. And you've already given. The point is you've already given to those charities and they keep coming back.
But let's stand back and what this says. There isn't enough money out there. People have to get money for good causes because it's not coming from government. So charities working as hard as they are, to me, is more a symptom of the ills of society that people are trying to solve.
That's a bleeding heart view. What they're doing is they're employing more and more people with sophisticated marketing techniques and companies at the front who aggressively pursue us to the point where you cannot walk past a street corner in Sydney without being assaulted by these people.
If you look at the major advances that have been made possible because of fundraising, so for instance, things like multiple sclerosis, does anyone realise actually what amazing strides they've made in that? And it's because of fundraising and it's because of people being out and about. So I know you're just on the receiving end and that makes you cross, but charities are actually important, Gary.
Yeah, look, they are important. The difficulty is some charities, for instance, they have real trouble trying to work out how much of their resources they devote to raising funds, how much of their resources they devote to doing what they do. And if they spend too much time doing what they do, they don't have the funds to do what they do. It's a real difficulty for them.
But then it's up to us as people who are making donations to actually do a bit of research and find out who are the really efficient charities.
Yep.
Well, unfortunately, they're not that transparent, and that's what we need a little bit more of in that industry.
There should be a national audit on this whole thing, and there should be, because there's a lot of government funding goes into some of these outfits, and there should be someone in government say, you four, you're all doing the same thing. You're all raising money for the same purpose, for the same problem. You four get together because we're only going to give one of you the money in the future because it's too much duplication happening.
We've got a real outbreak of summits at the moment. We've got Jay Weatherill in a very clever way doing a Royal Commission on nuclear. We've got all the various government reviews going on. We've got the Oz calling for a prosperity summit, and I've got to say there's a lot of merit to that. Lots of thinking.
There's merit to a prosperity summit. Let's all get together in the room and have another talk fest that leads nowhere.
Gary, there has got to be a discussion, a national discussion, on how we sort the budget out, and if having a summit and getting everyone to talk about it helps, that's a good thing.
I've been to lots of summits. They never solve anything.
They never solve
anything. Everyone gets their 15 minutes of fame standing at the podium.
I've got to say to you,
it's all about egos.
Gary's completely right, because when I was a political reporter, Bob Hawke had summits in the early 80s, and the only thing they achieved was the total transformation of the Australian economy and the period of boom that followed. So they achieved nothing.
We're going to get a lecture from history from Professor Stanley.
Well, I'm just telling you.
Thank you, John Stanley. I'm with you on that one.
On that note, thank you, Sue.
No worries. John, always good to talk to you.
Let's finish up as we started.